Welcome to the City of San Bernardino Planning Commission regular meeting. I'm going to ask everybody that has a cell phone to put it on vibrate or mute them. And I would like Commissioner Earp, if you would, lead us in a flag salute, please. Thank you, Commissioner. Ms. Sanchez, would you call the roll?
Okay. Chair Heasley.
Present.
Commissioner Machen. Commissioner Lopez. Okay. Commissioner Ebley.
Here.
Commissioner Earp.
Here.
Commissioner Jones.
Present.
Commissioner Quill.
Here.
Okay. Commissioners Durr, Lopez, and Gallagher are absent. We have quorum.
Thank you. Anybody wishing to speak tonight must be sworn in and will fill out a request to speak form. The forms are located at the table near the door. Ms. Sanchez, would you administer the oath.
Please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly affirm that the testimony you are about to give before this body will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? If so, please say I do. Thank you. Please be seated.
First thing tonight is our consent agenda. Consent items are considered routine in nature and may be enacted in one motion. All public and non-public hearings will be opened at one time. Any item may be discussed separately upon a request of the member of the Planning Commission or a member of the public. What does staff recommend for the consent agenda?
Yes, thank you, Chair and Commissioners. We have on tonight's agenda one item for consent calendar, and those are the minutes from October 19th. 2016 meeting, and staff is recommending approval of the minutes.
Thank you. Any corrections or additions to the minutes? If none, would I'll entertain a motion for approval of the minutes? So I have a motion. I have a second. All in favor? We have one abstinence. All in favor? Any opposed? None. 5-1. The public hearing is now open. The Planning Commission will first hear a report from staff, then the public hearing will be open. The applicant will have an opportunity to speak. Next member of the public will be allowed 3 minutes to speak. When your name is called, come forward and speak into the microphone. Say and spell your name and give your address for the tape record. After all is spoken, the applicant will be allowed to respond. Public hearing will then be closed, and the Planning Commission will begin deliberations and make a decision. All actions except general plan amendments and amendments to the Municipal Development Code are final action unless an appeal is filed and a fee paid within 15 days to the Community Development Department. If you challenge the resultant action of the Planning Commission in court, you may be limited to only raising those issues you or someone else raised at the public hearing described in this agenda or in written correspondence delivered to Community Development Department at or prior to the public hearing. Item number two.
Yes. Item number two is conditional use permit 16-02 and letter of
Powers,
convenience.
Pull the mic down, please. Can't hear you.
Item number two is conditional use permit 16-02 and letter of public convenience or necessity 16-02. This proposed project consists of a service station with a 5,800 6-foot convenience store. An ABC Type 20 license that's a beer and wine off sale, and a fast food deli counter. Also consists of 2,080 square foot drive through car wash, fueling canopies with 8 fueling islands, And this is all contained on two parcels on approximately 1.19 acres located at 2122 West Highland Avenue within the industrial light zone. It's at the northeast corner of State and Highland Avenue. Sorry, northwest corner of State and Highland Avenue. The service station would currently benefit an underserved neighborhood. There are only one or two other gas stations within about a mile radius of that location. The police department has reviewed the ABC license, done their investigated background report, and they support the Type 20 ABC license based on the crime statistics within the reporting district and within a half-mile radius of the subject site. This is a map that I put together to show the existing licenses within the census tract. It is census tract 43.01. I also drew a thousand foot radius around the proposed location. So just a few things to note on this map. There are currently nine existing off-sale licenses within the census tract. The census tract allows three, so they are over-concentrated. But of those nine, all but two are located within the county, and there's only one within a 1,000-foot radius of the proposed location. There you can see the site layout. Obviously nothing too exciting there, just the fuel islands to one side facing State Street and C-Store car wash on the western side of the property. This will be an AM/PM ARCO. You can see this is their standard design. This is looking north from the 210 freeway. The intersection there is where this proposed project is located. Again, over on the northwest corner. This is the existing site. There was a small bar there that has been closed for some time. Looking west. And then looking from looking southeast from the northeast corner. The Planning Commission, Planning staff recommendation today is that the Planning Commission adopt resolution number 2016-055, adopting the categorical exemption and approving conditional use permit 16-02 and a letter of convenience or public necessity 16-02 based on the findings of fact and subject to the conditions of approval. Before taking questions or adopting otherwise, I do have one condition that needed to be amended. Condition 10E currently states malt beverage products shall be sold with alcohol content greater than 5.5% by volume. It should state that shall not be sold. And if the commissioners have any questions, I can answer them. Would you like?
Bojorquez. Thank you. Yeah, we represent the applicant, and first of all, good evening. Thanks for the opportunity to present this project to you. It's been a great pleasure to work with Chantel through these this process. I would just like to point out that just as a clarification point, the existing bar is still open for business, and but we do control the lease, and it'll be shut down when we begin construction of our project, hopefully with your approval. We're here to answer any questions you may have. We're excited to be here and bring these, you know, first-class fueling stations with convenience store in Delhi. There's only one request that we'd like to make, is that on condition number 10H, we understand that the there may be some leeway in the development plan for the city, allowing us to the way the condition reads, and I'd like to read it to you, is containers of beer and malt liquor not in their original factory package of six packs of or greater. The way we understand it is that we cannot sell anything that is less than six pack under that are prepackaged by the factory. Nowadays, the manufacturers do sell or have available three packs. Okay, so we like to ask your support in allowing us to sell these prepackaged three packs. So, if we can ask to amend that condition to be, rather than reading six packs or greater, to be three packs or greater, we would greatly appreciate that. So that way, it would be a little bit closer to what our competitors are doing. We are not selling singles. We're only asking for whatever is prepackaged offered by the manufacturers of beer. With that said, I can answer any questions you may have. And we have our project manager, Eno Cruz, here, who may also answer questions regarding the site plan or elevations.
Commissioners, do you have any questions for the applicant? I have one. Would you be willing to accept a statement that you will attempt to buy and retire an existing liquor license within the city of San Bernardino as a condition for approval?
Yes, attempt. Sir. As a matter of fact, we do have a license in the city of San Bernardino in escrow that we're buying, so that we will be transferring over to this location.
I didn't explain myself well. I'm asking you if you would be willing to make the attempt to purchase and retire an additional license beyond the one that you're going to use for your facility of any type that becomes available within the city.
We
it's
have
an attempt. I didn't make it a mandatory.
You know, we have spent quite a few months searching for a retire license, and they're very, very difficult to locate. And I would ask the commission to allow us to transfer the one that we have purchased and so activated in this location, but not adding any more licenses. They're very difficult to get, specifically in the city of San Bernardino. We have tried, and I'm sure Chantel can confirm that, to look in other areas, you know, perhaps city of Highland or in the city, in the vicinity, but within the city, they're very difficult to obtain. So I asked for some leeway on that end.
I guess I could broaden it to somewhere in the areas surrounding our city, including county areas. I want you, what I'm asking for, we have an oversupply of liquor licenses within, ABC licenses within the city and its surrounding area. We have an over-concentration of licenses because of the way ABC does the census blocks and stuff. I'm asking if you'd be willing to accept the challenge to make an earnest attempt to find another license, buy it, and retire it. Is that something that you could agree to make the attempt, an earnest attempt to find and retire an additional license?
Yes, I think we could potentially do that if we stay within the vicinity of the city, including the county. we can potentially do that, sir.
Very good. That's what I'm asking, to try to reduce the plethora of ABC licenses we already exist in this city and in the surrounding areas.
Yes.
That's the only comment I have. Commissioner Machen? I have to defer to Mr. Prosecco, Director Prosecco. Is it signed as a condition to make the earnest attempt?
Well, I think, yes, it should be, to answer your question, Commissioner Machen, it should be a condition, but that the applicant use their best efforts to purchase and retire a license within the city or the surrounding area. I think if it's not a condition, it's hard for us to enforce anything. In best efforts, we have not in these types of cases, but in other cases, worked with applicants and asked them to produce records of where they've attempted to make purchases. So I'm comfortable if we say that they use their best efforts. That's enforceable.
Answer your question, Commissioner Machen? So I'm proposing to have that condition as to make that attempt, as we just discussed, trying to reduce the number of licenses. The only speaker forms I have on this item are both of you gentlemen. And unless there's a need for Mr. Cruz to say anything, I think you've answered the questions. We have no public comments on it.
Respectfully, commissioners, we didn't get an answer to their request to change condition 10H.
Oh,
that was going to be my next question.
Commissioner,
do we want to allow the three packs and change that language?
Never seen it.
I haven't either.
I don't know. Is this?
I have. It's just half a six pack in plastic.
Is that something new that
they've been around for a good couple of years. And they're only coming the 24-ounce packages, cans. They're not. We're not talking 12, 16-ounce. There's three packs. There's three cans in a package, prepackaged.
So it's essentially the same fluid amount as a six-pack, just in three packs.
That's correct. Thank you.
It's the same.
It's big cans.
Six-pack and three cans.
Yeah.
We're clarifying things ourselves.
Yes, sir.
Bear with us a moment.
Why wasn't the application originally submitted with the request for the three-pack?
Because we, at the time, didn't know we were going to be conditioned to no less than six packs. So it wasn't until Monday that we received the comments that we became aware that it was going to be six packs or more.
I actually think that
it's written into the development code
by the company, the manufacturer. So it is a standard for the manufacturers to do, as opposed to breaking open a six pack and selling three individuals. So I don't have a problem with it myself. Go ahead, Commissioner.
Say, I'm not sure that selling 324s is a way to encourage responsible drinking.
If I may add, we most of our competitors in the city are able to sell singles. They don't have these conditions, and I understand they're being grandfathered in. We're just asking to be a little bit closer to the competition so that we can offer these items. That's all we're asking for.
I don't find any difference between buying a six pack and buying a three pack. It's same amount of fluid ounces, just larger containers.
Guess I'm just thinking when you open one, you're going to finish.
Yeah. consensus of, do we need, we, I don't think we need to put this to a vote, do we, gentlemen? Everybody's okay with it?
I'm all right with that.
So we can modify that condition for this applicant?
Sure. Yes. So it will now read containers of beer or malt liquor not in their original factory packages of three packs or greater.
Thank you very much.
You explained it. That helps us. Any other questions, comments? I will entertain a motion. Thank you, gentlemen.
I'd like to make a motion to adopt resolution number 2016-055, adopting categorical exemption and approving conditional use permit 16-02 and letter of public convenience and necessity 16-02 based on the findings of fact and subject to recommended conditions of approval, also including the amendments made to, was it H?
10H. It'd be 4E, 4H, and the new condition regarding using best efforts to purchase and retire an additional license.
Exactly.
I have a motion.
Second.
Amendments and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Unanimous. Commissioner Quill. Item number three.
All right. Item number three tonight is conditional use permit 16-14. Sorry about that. It is a request to allow the development, establishment, and operation of a used automobile dealership with a sales office and showroom building containing approximately 6,400 square feet, along with the construction of the required on and off-site improvements on a property containing approximately 4 acres. It's located at 1388 Southeast Street, in the commercial general CG1 zone. This is an aerial of the property. As you can see, this is a little bit of an older aerial, so it actually shows the previous use on the property, which was also an automobile dealership. There's the zoning of the property. As you can see, it's backed up to the freeway, completely surrounded by other commercial development. There's some photographs of the existing site. As I said, the previous dealership that was there was demolished approximately 5 or more years ago. This is looking kind of southwest across the property from E Street towards the freeway. And this is at the intersection of Century Avenue, which comes right into the center of the site at the main entrance of the proposed development. And here's the proposed site plan. As you can see, there's a the 6,000 square foot sales building kind of right centered in the site, surrounded by all the customer parking and then inventory parking on both the north and south sides. Some proposed elevations for the building. This is a drive time dealership. Just the additional elevations for the building. And then proposed landscaping. As you can see, there's doing nice buffered landscaping around the entire side, even abutting the freeway, as well as surrounding the building in the center of the site. And our recommendation tonight is to adopt the categorical exemption or approve Resolution 2016-58, adopting the categorical exemption for the project and approving Conditional Use Permit 16-14 based on the findings of fact and subject to the recommendation or recommended conditions of approval.
Thank you. Any questions for staff? Does the applicant wish to make any kind of a presentation? Reminder, please state your name and address. Spell your last name for the tape record.
Good evening, commissioners. My name is Kevin Jankunas, J-A-N-K-U-N-A-S. I work for Drive Time Car Sales in their real estate department. I want to start off by thanking Planning Commission tonight for reviewing our case and staff for helping us finalize this application. Do not have a presentation for you tonight, but if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer.
I have one.
What, Mr. Agby?
What are the hours of operation going to be?
I would say it's actually contained in the staff report.
I missed it.
On the third page of the report at the top, based off the information we have from the applicant, it would be Monday through Thursday from 10 a.m. to 8, and Friday and Saturday, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., and closed Sundays.
That's correct. Thanks, Aaron.
Any other questions for your applicant? Discussion? I have nothing. I think it's a great idea. It's an empty lot that used to be a car dealership, and now we got somebody else coming in to do the same thing. At this point, unless there's something else, I'll entertain a motion. Commissioner Machen?
What?
Commissioner Machen, your mic's not on.
That would be to adopt resolution number 2016-058, adopting the categorical exemption and approving conditional use permit 16-14 based on the findings of fact and subject to the recommended conditions of approval.
I have a motion. Do I have a second? Mr. Jones is a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries unanimous. Thank you, gentlemen. Welcome.
Thank you.
Good to see another business come in and fill up a vacant spot in our city. Item number four.
Good evening, Commissioners. Item number four involves conditional use permit number 16-16. After reviewing the staff report and kind of going through the development code, some of the ABC requirements, and discussions with the city attorney's office, it's been determined that the letter of public convenience or necessity is not being required for this project due to the type of ABC license. If it were to be a type 48, which is straight alcohol on-site sale, it would be required, but it's not required because it's going to be a bona fide restaurant. So from the outset, I'd like to remove that part of the request. So the request before you is an application for an ABC Type 47 license. It's for the general on sale for a bona fide eating place for an existing restaurant that contains approximately 7,000 square feet with live entertainment. Property is zoned general commercial, and it's located at 4360 North Sierra Way. By way of background, as you're aware, that business has been there for quite a while. It was originally established in 1969. Has been a number of operators or owners over the last period of times, but there's always been an ABC licensed in there, and you know there's been different operations in there. The way that the development code addresses it. Basically, it was a non-conforming use in that there was not an existing conditional use permit there. There never has been. When our code was adopted in 2006, there was language or provisions in there that for alcohol-related businesses, as long as they did not close and maintain their similar type of business, they would be automatically deemed approved and would not have to come back for a CUP. The applicant purchased the property approximately in May of 2005 with the intent of maintaining the alcohol license and the restaurant and the live entertainment. He came to City Hall and he applied for an administrative development permit for the on-site improvements and to do some improvements to the existing building. There were really no expansions. It was just kind of to beautify the interior and the exterior of the property. During that time, the person that he was buying the property from determined or decided to keep the existing ABC license and take it with them somewhere else, which necessitated the need for the applicant to pursue a new CUP application. When he came in, we did go through the development code and kind of circumstances, and well, you know, there's been an ABC license there for quite a long time. We felt that there would be it would be more prudent to come to the Planning Commission with the request for a conditional use permit so that we could add conditions of approval to his operation and so that we could monitor it. Our development code states that if there's more than a 90-day lapse in the business operation, that it loses its non-conforming status. But the restaurant has been, and there has been an active license there, and it's not discontinued for more than 90 days. So we felt that it was, you know, that we be fine to continue or to proceed with the request, and thereby kind of providing for our recommendation before you of approval. We've been working on this application for quite a while. There's a number of items that we need to address that I'll discuss here shortly. But again, it's been quite of a work in progress, and we've been trying to work with the applicant. The applicant's been cooperative in trying to meet some of our concerns, some of our needs. We've been out to the location to see what kind of how we can address some of the comments that we have that I discussed earlier. One of the things that we found, what I found in my research of this, is that ABC has a process. Normally, if you have a business and you're going to apply for a new ABC license, you have to go into a lottery or what have you to buy a new one. But they do have a procedure where if there was a license there before and not more than 12 months has lapsed between the license going away and you applying, you go into a different pool for the category that's called original type of license. In your packet, I did include a letter from ABC notifying the applicant that he has been that he is eligible for that. He has not formally applied for that, and again, it's really pending the Planning Commission's decision whether or not a CUP would be approved, and then he would move forward with that application. And this is an aerial showing the location. It's on the west side of Sierra Way. And the zoning, the properties along Sierra Way are general commercial on both sides, and there's high-density residential to the west. This is looking towards the property, and this is looking north on Sierra Way. And this is directly across the street, and this is looking south. One of the items, if any of you are familiar with or have passed the site, one of the things that we noticed through early on, even in the administrative development permit process, there's only 8 parking stalls on the property. And so we were looking, well, originally when we were doing the administrative development permit, if it was going to be just a restaurant, no alcohol, it would be grandfathered in, if you will. And as we do with most buildings, you know, nonconforming as it relates to parking, as long as it's a continued of that use. However, because of the CUP application and because of the amount of customers and the size of the facility, we thought that you know there really is going to be a need for off-street parking for that facility. And we didn't want to have the patrons having to try to maneuver or figure out where they're going to park along the street or around the neighborhoods there. So what we've asked him to do is to identify potential locations and secure written approvals, if you will, from at least properties nearby that he could use parking for, you know, use their facilities. And so on this slide, it shows the box that's highlighted in red is the subject property, and to the south and to the north are the two other properties that we were looking at. This is the property that's approximately 75 feet to the south. There's an existing small little convenience center there. There are there's 30 parking stalls there. In your packet, there is a letter approving in concept that the owner would be allowed to have his patrons park there. The next slide is the church, which is farther up the street on 45th Street. This is the vacant lot there, and so that property owner has also provided a letter included in your packet that he would be allowed to use 45 parking spaces there. Before I continue on with the site plans and things, again with these off-site parking lots, if you will, one of the things that we've included, and it'll be later on in the conditions of approval, that he provide free valet parking for the patrons that come here. And so we would we'd have to work with him on the location, so it's a safe drop-off area, and one idea would be that they would actually drive into the property and then drop their car off, and maybe they can the valet can drive, continue through and go out the alley and then go to either of the spots. And so long as the business is open, that be provided at no charge to the customers. So here is the site plan. with Sierra Way to the right. And he's done quite a bit of improvements to it on the outdoor patio, and he's completely redone the interiors and the kitchen, as shown on the floor plan. And then we have some elevations of the property. In terms of our land use considerations, we've included some conditions of approval, as I mentioned earlier, that should the Planning Commission approve this conditional use permit application, we would actually ask the applicant to enter into more detailed or concrete agreements, parking agreements with the two property owners on 45th and on Sierra Way, rather than just a hand letter. You can use it when you feel like we're looking for something a little bit more formal that we could include and possibly record onto the property. So we want that to remain in place for as long as that business is operating. So that would be condition number six. Number seven, condition number seven requires the free valet parking that be provided on there. Condition number eight is the one that we had talked about earlier, about a six-month review. Upon the issuance of a certificate of occupancy, we would have the ability to review it on a six-month basis. If there are issues or non-compliance with some of the conditions of approval or what we felt was presented to us as part of the application, we would have the ability to come back. If we were able to resolve those with the applicants, we would come back to the Planning Commission and say, well, these are some new circumstances, and then take it from there. The Police Department has also reviewed this application, and they've included there what are their typical conditions of approval that are in the resolution. Those are conditions 28 to 45. And then we've also included our standard conditions that are from the Development Code for alcohol-related uses, which are in the resolution as condition number 13. I recognize that this is, we have an existing facility that's been there for quite some while. There may have been some challenges with that property in the past. We're looking at a kind of a pro-business attitude. We've worked with the applicant quite a bit. We've tried to resolve some of the items. We're hopeful that the Planning Commission sees it the way that we do. And our recommendation would be that the Planning Commission adopt Resolution 2016-060, adopting the categorical exemption and approving the conditional use permit number 1616. That concludes my presentation. I'd be glad to answer any questions. The applicant is also here in the audience. I would be more than happy to answer questions as well. Thank you.
To the Chair, I have a comment.
Commissioner, of course.
I want to commend staff for getting as creative as you can with the situations. Many businesses in our community are faced with parking problems because of the way the buildings were built years ago. And I think that's a real creative approach to the off-site parking and the agreement that you've been able to work with the tenant. I do have a question. Looking at that property, would there be a crosswalk? Would somebody have to pay for a crosswalk across that street, Sierra Way, perhaps? Maybe a condition like that or something?
That'd be a bad place for a crosswalk.
Well, it's right there in the curve.
Well, we're trying. We had a while back. What was that? The Copacabana. I think there was a while back, and there was some issues with parking possibly across the street, and then people having to figure out how to get across the street or dodge cars, back and forth. That's what I think that with the valet parking, and bringing them in. Rather than sometimes when you introduce new traffic motions on a street, you have to do traffic engineering studies, because now you're introducing a new movement, if you will. And for those, if you live in that area, if you've been there for a long time, and you all of a sudden you wake up one morning, there's a stop sign or there's a crosswalk, and it's never been there. And sometimes, in my experience, it kind of creates some issues. But we're hoping and we will monitor that. Through the valet that and the owner will be asked to make sure that as patrons know that the valet's there and it's free, and that's really the preference. We really do not want to impact the surrounding neighborhood. We don't really want people to park on the street and try to figure out how to get there.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the creativity in that.
Thank you very much, and we had to put our heads together on this one. We really did, and we're finding more and more where we have some of these. Well, San Bernardino's been around for a while, and when we look at our development code and what some of the requirements are, and trying to put together a plan of making things work and being business friendly and driving that for the city. Sometimes we have to put our heads together and appreciate it. We have a good team here. Thank you.
Any other questions for staff? Commissioner Earp? Microphone, please.
Sorry. Oliver, could you go back to the photograph of the front of the building? It was hard to tell from the elevations. There wasn't much detail there. Are there any plans or conditions for improving the exterior?
Well, this is an older street view, and so yeah, they are painting and they've done some modifications to the front, so it won't look like that. That's an existing condition.
Okay, is that part of the conditions? Or
yes, there's elevations and that we have for that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. I'm going to invite the applicant down. I have a couple questions for the applicant. Mr. Tobor? Welcome. Please state and say your spell your name.
Yeah. Good evening. My name is Cesar Tudor, and I'm the applicant for this project at the Zorba Lounge. I apologize for my voice due to bad flu, so I just want to apologize ahead. If you have any...
My question, you were here earlier when convenience store / discussion. I'm going to put the same type of condition, request that the condition is that you make the an earnest effort to find and retire, purchase and retire another ABC license of any type in San Bernardino City or within the immediate area.
Any time or
any kind of the ABC license for alcohol?
Like the gentleman before has said before, it's very difficult. Like Mr. Oliver said before, is that we didn't expect it to go through this problem as a San Bernardino resident business owner. I came to through an opportunity to purchase this business. But in the middle of the transaction, the lady, didn't decide to give us the license, so we just got stuck. And we've been trying so hard for 2 years to purchase a license. We wanted to purchase a license, and we couldn't get it. And we had to go to ABC, and we just applied the lottery, and luckily we won. So what I'm trying to say is that it's very hard. I'm willing to do that if it's possible, if I can find, but I tried 2 years already to purchase one.
I'm just, the condition is to ask you to make an earnest effort to find another license, buy it, and retire it. You're willing to do that? Yes or no? Make the attempt.
If it has to do with approval, I would like to do it. I can do it.
There we go. Because I really want to see an improvement in that area, and I think your restaurant will be a tremendous improvement over the past practices at that location.
I have some pictures, and I would like to show you guys the improvement that we did to get an idea, besides the plans, what we did inside, and to kind of get an idea what we wanted to do over there and what kind of project we wanted to do, if you guys would like to.
If you have them available and you would like to show it to us, that's well and good. We'll accept that. The more information we have, the better we can make decisions. I've seen the outside improvements. And again, I applaud you and staff for working out the valet parking agreement, because your customers probably don't want to walk two or three blocks to get to and from the restaurant and cross a major roadway like Sierra Way is.
Yes, that was the biggest problem when we just went through the condition use permit, the parking. And the staff has been very helpful, and special Oliver has been, you know, next to me the whole process, and make it, he did make it very easy for me.
Commissioner Machen?
What's the occupancy load of this building?
I'm not sure. That would be determined through the building and safety department. Do you have an idea, Caesar? How many people?
I'm still don't know, but should be about 200. I'm assuming 200.
For me being in that facility when it was under other ownership, you've made a huge amount of change.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to do, to kind of do something else that, you know, I'm very familiar with the city of San Bernardino, and I know that it's not a restaurant that can offer something like that, and we wanted to improve as much as we can the area and try to bring people from surrounding cities and enjoy our city.
Yes, I would like to say also, I live in that neighborhood up there, or in that area, and I've traveled by there. I've recognized the outside work, but I didn't realize you were doing this a beautiful job you've done on the inside.
I don't want to say that, but the reason we didn't went all the way yet outside, because of the people outside, I don't want them to kind of get too much attention now, because we don't want something happen and to have some break-ins. But the same thing we did inside, we're going to do outside too.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the fact that that you're doing something to improve that particular area of our city, and that's a positive note. Two thumbs up for you.
Thank you. I'm like I said before, you know, I'm San Bernardino resident, and I would like to improve as much as I can, and I enjoy doing it. And I believe that, you know, everything is going to get better and better.
So when are you going to open?
When you guys going to let me.
What a deal.
Tonight, but it's too late.
Any other questions for Mr. Todor? Thank you very much, sir. Any questions for staff? I will entertain a motion, and that motion will not include the letter of public convenience or necessity 1605. Because that's not required. Correct?
Correct. That's correct.
Well, I will make a motion. Is that in, is that written in here?
Yeah, that's written in there.
Okay. I'll make a motion that we accept staff recommendations that the Planning Commission adopt Resolution 2016-060, adopting the categorical exemption for conditional use permit 16-16 and letter of public convenience or necessity 16-05, and approving conditional use permit 16-16 and letter of public convenience or necessity 16-05, based on the finding of facts and subject to the recommended conditions of approval.
Okay. We need to take that the one statement out.
Yeah, if I can, Commissioner Quill and Jones, if I can just clarify, you didn't mean to approve the P. The PCN.
Of public convenience.
Okay.
Now, the reason for that is that a PCN, public convenience or necessity finding, is required in this case due to the oversaturation. However, the Business and Professions Code section that deals with this says that for a Type 47 establishment, which is what this restaurant is going to be, bona fide eating establishment with an on-sale license, that the Alcoholic Beverages Commission makes the determination of public convenience or necessity rather than the local jurisdiction, which would make the determination in other types of license cases. So they'll still need a finding of public convenience or necessity. They'll just need to apply for the finding to the ABC at the time that they apply for their Type 47 license.
Okay. Would you like me to read that motion?
I don't think you do need to reread it. If you can just...
Try again?
No, you just say that you're going to strike the PCN okay. finding. That's all.
Thank you.
With the addition, added condition for an attempt to purchase a, and retire an additional license.
Correct.
We have a we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Now you can go open your business.
Well,
as soon as you get the other stuff done.
Yeah.
Doors are going to be right open. I have like four doors everywhere.
Thank you, Rich. Item number five.
Item number five is conditional use permit 16-18. The proposed project is to establish and operate a used automobile dealership with a sales office containing approximately 7,531 square feet in a multi-tenant center containing approximately 13,932 square feet. On a parcel containing approximately 0.59 acres. The address is located at 1325 South Camino Real, South Camino Real Road within the Commercial General CG1 zone. This is the location map. Here we have an aerial map of the site. This is actually looking at the existing site south onto the commercial center. This is looking east on the onto the commercial center. Existing commercial center contains approximately 13,932 square feet. It does consist of five retail and office spaces containing approximately a total of 6,401 square feet. The existing tenant space in which the used auto dealership will go into contains approximately 7,531 square feet. The existing tenant space is fully improved and furnished, and it will serve for the sales office. In addition, it will have eight parking stalls for outdoor display area. The applicant is not proposing any type of automobile repair, car washing, or any other related type of services to be on the site. This will be all done off-site. The operating hours will be Monday through Sunday between 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. There will be six new full-time employees consisting of two managers and four sales associates. This is the existing site plan. As you can see, we can go back. The eight highlighted dashed spaces, a little bit up north of that, the building, that's going to be where the automobiles will be, the outdoor display area. Next slide. This is the existing floor plan of the tenant space. This is on the site. It's a little bit dark. I took the pictures early this morning. Southwest onto South Auto Plaza Drive. This is looking west onto South Auto Plaza Drive. Again, it's a little bit dark, but it's actually, that's a vacant lot and also flood control. This is looking north, the 215 freeway exit. And this is also looking northeast onto the 215 freeway exit. The Planning Division staff recommends that Planning Commission adopt Resolution Number 2016-01, adopting the categorical exception and approving conditional use permit 16-18 based on findings of fact and subject to the recommended conditions of approval. If you have any questions, I'm open for any questions. The applicant is also here as well.
Commissioners, any questions? No questions.
No questions.
Anybody have any questions for the applicant, or we open for discussion? Applicant have any particular presentation you'd like to make? Thank you. Please identify yourself.
Good evening, gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Asar Hilo. I'm at 28809 Harwick Drive in Highland, California. I appreciate your time for looking at this project. Just a correction on the property size. Actually, the property size is at 1.36 acres. It's a little bigger than Elizabeth had mentioned a little bit ago. I do thank you for a good staff report. The property itself is located in an area with other auto dealerships around. What we're looking for the property has been vacant for a long time. It just got on the market, and I'm purchasing the property for a long time investment, and I think it's a good, very good location for auto sales. I know it's smaller than the earlier gentleman that they brought in, the 4.9 acre, but this I think would be positive for that particular area, and it will do. We will hire approximately 6 people to run that operation. We do a lot of wholesale, and that's what some of the offices will be for the wholesale, but we do need the retail license at that location too. If there's any question, I'd be more than happy to answer.
Any questions? This is almost a slam dunk for you guys.
You know, this is a very friendly city, and I do appreciate the friendliness for businesses. I think it's
well, what we're trying to do is welcome businesses to come in, and particularly somebody that's taking a vacant property that's not being utilized and putting an ongoing concern in there is a positive for our city and for the citizens of the city that we have.
I'm very
less
happy to be
empty
part of
buildings
this.
Sitting around.
I'm very happy to apply for this application. Thank you, gentlemen.
And I'll entertain a motion.
I'd like to make a motion to approve
Commissioner Jones.
Conditional use permit 1618. I'd like to make a motion to approve to adopt resolution number 2016-061, adopting the categorical exemption and approving conditional use permit 16-16, based on the finding of facts and subject to the recommended conditions of approval.
I have a motion. Do I have a second? I have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
I would like to, it was actually 16-18. I'm not sure if that needs to be on record. It was noted as 16-16.
Oh, strike that, 16-18.
Thank you.
Oh. Okay. Corrected. Item number 6. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
Hello, Commissioners. Item number 6 is a project which is specific plan number 1501. It's called the Waterman Baseline Neighborhood Transformation Specific Plan. It's generally bound, the aerial show or the exhibit in front of you shows the approximate location. It's generally bound by Highland Avenue to the north, Tippecanoe to the east, 3rd Street to the south, and Sierra Way to the west. The proposed general specific plan is an attempt to take the existing approximately 710 acres and create essentially a mechanism to encourage a revitalization of that area by creating land use policies and development standards, include a maximum build out up to 4,300 square feet. I'm sorry, 4,300 units. Approximately 3 million square feet of non-residential uses, commercial and alike, and to also facilitate the construction of associated transportation, mobility, and infrastructure improvements within that area. This has been a project that's been in the works for quite a while. National Corps began this project back in approximately 2010 when they commenced what they called their community visioning process. There was a number of stakeholders that they engaged over time to solicit their input and comments and what they felt was would be a need or a mechanism to improve that general area. As the application was getting close to submittal and we had a project description or more like an administrative draft of the specific plan, we prepared a notice of preparation to be circulated to the public and the responsible agencies that an environmental impact report was going to be prepared and that we'd like to solicit comments so that we knew what kind of information to include in that. That's a 30-day period. Within that time, in September 10th, there was also what's required by CEQA, a scoping meeting was conducted there at the Waterman Gardens community room, where there was an opportunity for, again, the residents and other interested individuals to weigh in as to what kinds of items they would like to see, both in the specific plan or in the environmental impact report. And there were very little comments that were presented or at that time. On September 15th of last year, the specific plan document was officially submitted, and we began going through that and our iterations of revisions and modifications and what we were trying to accomplish within that area. And primarily, the specific plan is typically what it creates its mini development code or zoning ordinance for that area. There are some, so you'll see some unique features when it relates to setbacks, land uses. I think you remember at the earlier study session that we had a couple of months ago where Alexa from National Corps had indicated there's some uses that we're trying to phase out as those properties are redeveloped or accumulated. And so, again, it's a document to essentially revitalize the area. It's not going to happen overnight. There isn't a particular project specifically that's part of this. It's more, like I said, more of a mini zoning code or ordinance, if you will. In July of this year, the draft environmental impact report and the specific plan were circulated for the CEQA mandated 45-day public review period so that we could, again, solicit more comments as to its contents. That period ended, and then we worked with the National Corps to finalize the document, and it was presented to the Development and Environmental Review Committee on October the 27th, and they forwarded the item to the Planning Commission for consideration. Again, in a moment, Alexa will kind of walk you through the specific plan and what it's looking to accomplish. But generally, you know, the specific plan is made up of eight chapters. In the introduction and in the document, it talks about the community visioning. So there's a large section in there that kind of walks you through who was engaged, who were the stakeholders as part of that process, what came out of those workshops, that dialogue, and those conversations, and how that guided and shaped the contents of the document. The creation of the planning districts within the plan, there are six districts ranging from the residential, commercial, there's mobility, there's employment. So it kind of outlines, again, almost like it's mini zoning map, if you will, that then identifies what types of uses can go in each area. And it also provides us development standards and use tables of what would go in each area. There's also some design guidelines addressing the architecture, landscaping and public improvements and those sorts of things. Mobility plan talks about trails of different varieties, again, to get people in and around that area. Infrastructure plan, we'll talk about what kind of improvements need to be done. It identifies what needs there will be for water, sewer, street improvements and those kinds of things. So as we begin to process projects within this area, we could address those which have been identified. And again, the final chapter is the implementation and administrative procedures for projects that would be coming through this project. Again, there was a final environmental impact report has been prepared, and the components of that are, like I mentioned earlier, there was a draft environmental impact report that was prepared and circulated. Once those comments come back, we are required to respond to those comments, and note that that's included as part of that. We also have to make findings of fact where we address each environmental item. I won't say impact, but the, you know, you have to, air quality, noise, traffic. There's a number of items from your environmental checklist that you address how it meets, what mitigation measures are going to be included to, so there's non-significant or lower level of significance. And then there's also a statement of overriding considerations for those areas, those environmental items that that have short-term or unmitigatable items. And for instance, one example would be, you know, construction noise or air emissions during construction, because you have a high concentration of emissions going on. That's something that you know, that you can't fully mitigate, but it's short-term. And it also, in the statement of overriding considerations, it talks about what are the benefits when you take the, well, there's going to be this impact, but these are the benefits to the community as a result, you know, as a result of the overall project. So it's kind of a weighs and balance of, you know, kind of what we're trying to achieve. And finally, a mitigation monitoring and reporting program that, again, as projects are implemented, they are required to go through these different measures, whether they be off-site improvements or measures to alleviate noise and such. That concludes my portion of the presentation. I'd like to hold a marker to return. Alexa Washburn is here from National Corps. She also has a presentation for you this evening, and we'll walk you through that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Oliver. And will you be forwarding? Okay. Okay, good evening, Honorable Chair and Commissioners. On behalf of National Community Renaissance and our partners, the Housing Authority of the County of San Bernardino and the Neighborhood Transformation Collaborative of Central San Bernardino, we're grateful to be here tonight and to present the specific plan in its entirety. At our workshop that we had with you in September, you were given the executive summary, and I kept my presentation rather high level in terms of just focusing on the vision for each of the districts. So tonight I want to dive a bit deeper into the land use strategies, the mobility strategies, and most importantly, the implementation strategies, and some of the unique features that are in the document. Next slide, please. The neighborhood that surrounds the intersection of Waterman and Baseline is probably one of the most challenged neighborhoods in the city. And this specific plan brought the community together to establish a cohesive vision for the neighborhood. But it goes a step beyond that. It takes a vision and it provides a collective roadmap or action steps to achieve that vision. The plan examines and leverages the area's strengths and assets to promote investment, but it also identifies the gaps and the challenges that we would need to address to achieve the vision. Knowing these strengths and weaknesses and opportunities and challenges, we can coordinate development as projects come in and transportation and needed infrastructure improvements and align resources for greater impact. By adopting this plan, it will allow the city or establish eligibility for the city to apply for certain funding sources, certain grants, federal, state, and local grants. And then through the plan actually acts as a streamlining for development. It acts as incentives. There's a number of incentive programs presented in the plan, but also through certifying the EIR that also streamlines future development. Next slide, please. This is a community-supported plan. We held literally dozens upon dozens, hundreds of meetings since 2010. Meetings, focus groups, events, we shared meals with our neighbors, we conducted surveys, and this is a timeline. I know it's hard to see, but you see the number of outreach efforts and engagement opportunities that we had. And this was not only to receive input on the plan, but to confirm the input is accurately reflected in the document that's before you tonight. Next slide. One of our most proud accomplishments of the specific plan effort is the formation of the Neighborhood Transformation Collaborative, or NTC. This NTC was formed in April of 2015, and it's grown to include over 30 organizations that meet on a monthly basis. These organizations are nonprofits, even government agencies, that are focusing their services in the plan area. Next slide, please. The NTC is really leading the transformation of this neighborhood. They've organized cleanups, movie nights. They've partnered with the police department to install murals in crime hotspot locations. We've convened the businesses along Baseline, and we're working on forming a business improvement district or a similar organization. We're also partnering with the city and looking at starting a facade improvement program. We've launched Lights On San Bernardino, which is a campaign to improve neighborhood safety by fixing streetlights and lights on homes. We formulated, as part of this monthly meeting, it's one of the only community development book clubs in the entire nation, and to build capacity of these local organizations through data sharing. And then we've held a number of community events, such as our Holiday Resources Fair, which is coming up on December 10th. Next slide, please. So we've done a lot of footwork to get the businesses and the residents to take ownership of not only this plan, but ownership of their neighborhood. And it's these small wins that have built momentum and have increased their interest to continue to be involved and really to assist with the cities and your leadership to achieve the vision that they've established in this specific plan. So to build on the beautification and revitalization efforts that I named, you know, the specific plan is really a logical and necessary next step. During the first phase of the specific plan program, we engaged the community to establish a vision and goals and what the community believes to be priorities for the next 10 to 20 years. Next slide, please. The community established 5 goals, and they're listed in priority here. Number one, first and foremost, is to improve neighborhood safety. They envision in the future for this neighborhood to be a safe neighborhood, one where the kids can be playing outside, out in the streets. So safety is number one. Also to provide a variety of housing opportunities and choices, everything from single-family homes, townhomes, condominiums, to apartments. To promote neighborhood investment, they envision a reinvigorated commercial districts with enhanced identities. To ensure economic prosperity, that's the people that are living within the neighborhood have access to local jobs and family support services. And then lastly, to foster a healthy and walkable community. This is through multimodal transportation, pedestrian, bicycle, transit, as well as roadway improvements. And being that the plan area is within a short distance of downtown, this specific plan area is not meant to compete with downtown, but rather it's meant to complement and create synergies with the downtown. And we really want this specific plan to serve as a model for other revitalization efforts that are happening in the city, such as the revitalization effort underway in the downtown and the Carousel Mall. So to implement the specific plan goals and visions, the plan area was divided into 6 districts. And I remember at the workshop, I kind of went into detail about what the vision were for the 6 districts. But they're based on existing land uses, street patterns, and then the synergy for future opportunities. Then to guide development, next slide, please. The specific plan establishes 5 new land use zones to achieve a mix of residential and non-residential uses. The proposed land use plan is shown in the map here, and the 5 zones include corridor mixed use. So the corridor mixed use zone are those sites that are identified in the lighter blue color. This zone is intended to encourage development of a mix of both neighborhoods serving commercial uses along Baseline, primarily along Baseline and Waterman Avenue. This zone would accommodate both vertical mixed use, so where you may have ground floor retail with residential above, but also horizontal mixed use, where you might have commercial next door to multifamily. The density envisioned for this zone is up to 20 dwelling units per acre. The second zone is the mixed-use village, and these sites, the areas that are zoned mixed-use village, are highlighted in red. This zone is intended to develop a pedestrian-oriented environment with a variety of housing opportunities, commercial shops, and eating establishments. The mixed-use development will be encouraged with residential uses allowed up to 30 dwelling units per acre. These zones are really meant to be mixed-use villages, create a sense of place. The next zone is called neighborhood residential, and these areas are highlighted in yellow. And the neighborhood residential zone is really intended to promote the preservation and enhancement of the existing single-family neighborhoods. So we're maintaining the current density at 14 dwelling units per acre. The employment zone is highlighted in dark blue, and this zone is intended to promote the development of local jobs, including non-residential uses. So we're looking at office, commercial, business park opportunities, again, to establish local jobs in close proximity to the existing neighborhoods. Here we're looking for a floor area ratio up to 0.75. And then the last zone is the open space or public zone. And this is intended to preserve but also create additional recreational and open space opportunities throughout the plan area. Overall, the land use plan proposes to accommodate an increase of approximately 2,000 units and about 1 million square feet within each of the six districts. Again, this is at future build-out, year 2035, year 2040. Now, within each district, there's two types of opportunity sites that have been identified. We have catalytic sites and redevelopment sites. And catalytic sites are envisioned to be rather significant, large development projects that are likely to occur. They're either underway right now, such as the redevelopment of Waterman Gardens, now rebranded Arrowhead Grove, or likely to occur in the near future. But why we call these catalytic is because they build momentum and they will have a direct effect on the sites that are directly around them. So they're catalytic in that nature in terms of being catalytic to redevelopment and redeveloping the parcels around them. We've identified seven catalytic sites, and they're shown in red here. In contrast, redevelopment sites are parcels throughout the plan area that are generally vacant or house underutilized uses. Much of these, you can see, are in the light blue. And they may also require additional steps to redevelop. So, for example, lot consolidation. A lot of the smaller lots upon the north portion of Waterman Avenue may need to be consolidated for a substantial project to occur, or it might require demolition of existing buildings. And then the third areas are these preservation and enhancement areas that are shown in yellow. Again, these are largely existing residential neighborhoods. We want to promote programs, facade improvements for the residential, for the houses and so forth. And then, of course, in green, we still have the open space areas. One of the unique features of the specific plan is the community benefits program. And this is where developers are offered the opportunity to request increases or flexibility in specific development standards. In exchange, they're required to provide community benefits. Some of the community benefits they would be required to provide are listed here. But this is really to encourage larger, cohesive developments to contribute to the larger revitalization of the broader neighborhood. So it basically establishes a tiered development incentive program. So again, a developer would come in. They would need to request to participate in this tiered development incentive program. In exchange, they'd enter into an agreement with the city. And in exchange for those development incentives, they would have to provide some of the community benefits listed here. So I think that's a rather unique program that's a win-win for not only the city and the community, but also the developer. Next slide, please. One of the priorities or main priorities beyond public safety that was identified by the community is the lack of parks and open space. There's about 149 acres of existing park and recreational facilities within the specific plan area or within distance of it. But through development at build-out, the demand would increase to 42 acres. So wherever possible, we tried to identify vacant land or opportunities to provide additional open space in parks and recreation. There's also incentives to developers to provide parks and recreational amenities, again, in exchange for increases in densities and height and so forth. And that's through the community benefits program that I just talked about. Next slide, please. And these are just some examples of open space opportunities. When I talk about parks and recreational opportunities, it doesn't need to be a large regional park, such as the Paris. It can be an infill development. It can be an infill lot within an existing neighborhood that you can do a little pocket park or a community garden. So we try to identify these opportunities throughout each of the six districts to spread the access to open space and recreation. Next slide, please. Our transportation consultant, Farron Pierce, conducted a traffic impact analysis that evaluates the level of service at 30 intersections within and around the planning area. But they also analyzed the area for bicycle, pedestrian, and transit opportunities, as well as gaps in the systems. There were, to better connect the plan area to the surrounding job centers and to the downtown, two new bicycle paths have been prioritized by the community. You'll see a class one bicycle path proposed along City Creek, along the eastern edge of the plan area. And then the western route is intended to connect the center of the plan area to the downtown, to the SBX, as well as the new transit center. Throughout the plan area, pedestrian improvements were also identified. This area really lacks pedestrian access and mobility. It's pretty limited and inadequate, and it's something that we heard again and again from the residents. And this was verified by our transportation consultant through on-the-ground surveying. And this main problem is being safety. I mean, many of the roadways are missing sidewalks, crosswalks, or where they're established, there may be deteriorated in terms of paint and concrete. And so we've identified where those gaps are in the system. This allows, as grant opportunities to become available, for us to know where these gaps are and where to direct funding. It also allows groups such as the NTC to go after grant funding to complete the network, or as developments are proposed, conditioning those projects. And then lastly, the implementation planner strategy. This is really meant to be a resource guide. It contains a menu of tools, financing tools, non-financial tools. But I was asked at the workshop by one of the commissioners, if you can name the top four things that you would prioritize for implementation. And that really coincides with our four-step implementation plan. And really, the first thing we need to do is remove constraints and barriers. Address crime and safety concerns. Again, that's the first and foremost problem area that we heard from the residents. But also combat influence of blight, and then just invest in that basic infrastructure improvement. So we've identified the improvements that are needed in the infrastructure, both mobility, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, but also sewer, water, and storm drainage. Second would be to implement economic development strategies. And I don't want to just focus on attracting new businesses. We need to focus on the businesses that are existing, how we can build capacity and look to expand their services while also looking at new market sectors. And the Neighborhood Transformation Collaborative has already begun to implement this strategy through the formation of the Business Improvement District that's underway, as well as the Facade Improvement Program that we're hoping to establish with the city. The third point in the strategy is the leadership prioritization. And when I talk about leadership, we're not solely relying on the elected and appointed officials such as yourself. It's the leadership also that's building capacity within the community, such as the NTC. And so it doesn't solely fall on the city. In fact, the NTC is willing and able to take on part of the leadership and really build the capacity of the residents to fulfill and see this plan to fruition. And the fourth is improvements to support development over time. And this is looking at completing some of those, again, those mobility improvements, pedestrian, bicycle improvements, provide adequate open space and parks wherever possible, looking at transit enhancements and filling in the infrastructure gaps. So that, in a nutshell, is a summary of the full specific plan. I'm more than happy to answer any questions that you may have, and us, you know, and we also have our consultant team here. So thank you.
Turn my mic back on. I went through the book that you gave us.
Yes.
I have some questions for clarification.
Okay.
In the executive summary, under District 5, the gateway, connect to the SBX line along Arrowhead Avenue. Arrowhead Avenue parallels the SBX line, so I'm a little confused there.
It might have been an error. Let me. Do you have a page number, sir? Oh, in the executive summary.
In the executive summary.
I believe that's supposed to be baseline. Let's see.
Well, that would make more sense.
Yeah. So that thing, we'll make that correction. It's noted.
All right. Any other commissioners have questions before I go through my list of things that I was confused about? Sometimes I get easily confused.
I do have a question. In reading through this, in the setback guidelines, I don't know if we're that far into that yet, but on page 5-5, I tried to read the required setbacks, and in that paragraph A, down towards the bottom, you emphasize setback a minimum of 20 feet, but yet you've got 22 foot in parentheses. I don't understand what that means.
So this is referring to what we call step backs. This is to prevent a large massing or facade along a building. So basically, for every 20 feet in height, you step back 10 feet. So it's to break up the building, and what you get is more of a stepped building, and it opens up the pedestrian environment down below.
So the taller the building, the further it has to set back?
Correct. But it's based on height. So, for example, the first 20 feet of a building, you would step back 10 feet. But then if you're going an additional 10 feet back or 10 feet up, it keeps stepping back for each additional 10 feet. So you're creating almost like stairs, right?
Okay. It says also in that same paragraph.
34 inches.
Yeah, I know. It says the building shall set back a minimum of 30 feet, and then it says, I'm sure this is typo, it says 34 inches from the adjacent side.
Yeah, that's meant to be 30 feet.
30 feet or 34?
30.
Okay, well, that to me, that's a little confusing. Because the other one at 20 feet, it's actually 22. Down here it's 30 feet, and it should have been 30.
This is where this is a setback on the side setback, whereas the other one is a front set side setback. So it's a front yard setback versus a side setback.
Yes.
Yeah, which is correct.
I'm confused when you say if you go back so many feet, you have to. If the building goes higher, then you have to set back additional feet.
Correct. And that's why if you turn to the next page, we're hoping that that illustration provides clarity in how the step back requirements would be applied. We provide greater setbacks when you have non-residential uses abutting residential uses. We want to avoid that conflict.
Is this standard being used in other communities? Is that pretty much?
Yes.
Okay. If I may ask another question.
Go for it. Turn your mic on.
Okay. Going forward to page 5-16, I see a place here where it says metal security bars, gates, grills, shutters, wire mesh shall not be used on the exterior of any door, window that is visible from the street or other public place. Well,
we know what our community looks like. We know the necessity of security. So how do you get around that? You just don't allow it?
Interior.
Interior stuff?
Yeah, there would be other security mechanisms to use, okay, other than those metal gates.
Okay. Okay.
My turn.
Go ahead.
On 3-19, Chapter 3, Planning Districts, you referred to District 2 as a West Side neighborhood, and it's primarily residential now. And I don't understand how you're going to, how you're proposing to reduce or eliminate the extreme crime situation in that area, both personal attack property as well as property crime. You know, I know what your proposal is. I can't see for the life of me how you're going to fix it by stating that you're going to fix it. I don't see any actual you shall do this and this will make this happen. You have a plan, but I question the execution. Do you have any answers on how this is going to take place, the execution of your plan, any portion of it?
Yes. This part of the plan is actually the vision for District 2. So we envision this to be a safe area. And there's a number of strategies. In fact, we're employing strategies that are underway right now. One example is the Lights On campaign that the NTC has started. And this is, it's actually a very simple program to where we worked with the Public Works Department, had them come out and simply fix streetlights. And then we worked with a lot of the homeowners in the neighborhood or the apartment owners to install additional lighting on the outside, and also worked with the Public Works Department to trim back trees. So it's just that that maintenance and upgrades, simple light upgrades, goes a long ways. It's a start. As this neighborhood redevelops and the residents take more pride in ownership, it's a natural progression also to where they take pride in reporting criminal activity and take pride in their homes. So that's just one example.
Again, it sounds very entertaining and very good. Who pays for it?
Well, there's a number of opportunities. In the implementation section, there is a menu of financing tools that are available as the time that the specific plan was written. The example of the NTC Lights On program is something that the NTC got a grant for, and a $500,000 grant, and they chose to spend it in this neighborhood and go one street at a time to implement these, what we call CEPTED, crime prevention through environmental design principles. So that's just one example. Again, we don't. It's not solely up to the city to apply for grants. And in fact, another opportunity is we worked with the city. We prepared a grant application, submitted it to the state, and we were awarded $400,000. And the city said it simply had to sign it. So you have a number of organizations that are wanting to work to improve this neighborhood, and there's a number of different financing sources and grants out there. And we've tried to provide this as a resource guide and a menu of tools that we can utilize.
Okay. My concern is currently the city is understaffed to apply and go forward on a lot of these grants and opportunities for financial input from other things. It's still all our money as citizens, you know. But I'd like to get some of the money back that we pay for the federal government and bring it back to this city. So you're saying that your organization are part of helping the city with moving forward on the application process to get this funding from other sources outside the city?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Answer to that question.
If I may, Chair, I don't think Alexa really explained the NTC in great enough detail. She did talk about it, but she did mention that there are monthly meetings, and those involve members of National Corps, myself, the police department, Public Works, Parks and Recreation. There's also a couple of nonprofit groups that are involved and a couple of council members. So this monthly group does get together and really talk about strategy for implementation. The plan really does create a vision for the future, and I think you're correct in noting that the city doesn't have enough staff to do a lot of this on its own, so this plan really creates the partnership that's going to carry the city forward in the future. So we don't have all of the answers, but this is a very good roadmap on how to move forward. So I just think kind of setting that as a framework and perspective might help as we continue to go through this.
Okay, well, that answers a whole bunch of my questions about funding, because that's a primary concern that I have is bottom line, who supplies the dollars to accomplish this goal? And our city is not in a shape to do a lot of the funding right now. I think that's covering everything that I was asking. Well, I do support on 8-39, prohibit new liquor stores, because you've sat here tonight and you've heard some of our concerns as a citizen. It's not just my concern or the commissioners, but I myself receive feedback from the community on a lot of the problems that they see in the community are based on a lot of liquor stores being available and a lot of people that have income that may not be self-generated that are utilizing possibly fraudulent purposes to use EBC cards to purchase alcohol instead of food for their family. It's an addiction problem that we have a lot of in this city, and it kind of scares me a lot. But that's it for my questions and comments.
I have another question, if I may. One of the areas in this I really took some interest in is the sign regulations, and I am in the sign business, so I want to bring that up. This is very vague, and I know we're going to talk about a proposed sign ordinance that we're working on, but you say in here that backlit internally illuminated awnings are prohibited. Well, our city is full of those, and that's a common way of illuminating, an inexpensive way of building a sign. Well, if you prohibit illuminating them, you're going to have a pretty dark city. Also, you don't address... you talk about a lot of things that are prohibited and perhaps not a whole lot about what is allowed. As far as illumination, I think different levels of illumination should be brought into this. Okay. That's what most communities are doing now. Okay. The type of illumination, the LED, between that and the fluorescent and the high-output lamps and so on. So I think a lot of that needs to be addressed in here. But again, we'll probably be working on that with the sign ordinance.
Yeah.
The maximum height of a wall sign shall be no more than 25% of the height of story. That's completely does not make sense to me, and that's on page 5-42. You're addressing wall signs there, and you're talking about painted wall signs. You're not addressing channel letters or internally illuminated letters. So I think there's still a lot of work that needs to be done to this to make businesses competitive with one another, so one business will have an opportunity to survive while the others may not have the signage they need to compete. So I see a lot of work that left to be done in this area. So thank you.
And this is one area that we did have a conversation with staff about, knowing that you're in the process of updating your sign ordinance. And so we're willing to work, you know, with staff and even defer to the updated sign ordinance.
Thank you.
Commissioner.
Thank you. I just wondered, you know, some of these are you know, some pretty nice standards for things. And I just wondered, just knowing the nature of this area, do we create economic hurdles for new businesses? You know, it's not Newport Beach there, right?
Yes.
And you know, the just some of the things that this step backs, the glass requirements in front, and everything. Are we setting a bar that's too high, at least in the near future?
Well, the plan does set a vision, and you're correct. It does step up the development requirements of properties or projects in the area. I think that's a good thing. We should be striving to improve standards, and that's something that we at the staff level have been working on projects. As projects do come in, that the planning staff does a very good job in, even though we don't have a lot of design standards in our development code, we do try to work very hard to get the best project possible. And this does set a higher standard, you're right, than a lot of what is out there. We do hear from applicants often that, you know, this or that provision of the development code is expensive for somebody to meet. So we do recognize that some of this does add cost, but good design doesn't always have to be expensive. We're not talking about expensive materials. A lot of it is just proportion and scale of buildings and the mix of materials. So, yes, builders will be able to say, you know, this is more expensive than a building that's adjacent to me, but we think that that can be a good thing.
Thank you. I guess another one was, and I think you've kind of touched on this already, but there, you know, reading through here, there's a lot of actions that have to take place to, you know, carry out the vision. Do you see the Neighborhood Transformation Council, NTCs?
Yes.
Is that the primary mover to keep things?
It is, yes. And that group meets on Wednesday mornings once a month. And it's a very well-attended meeting. And, yeah, it's really a strategy session for how we can begin to get some victories in that neighborhood.
And I guess just one last question. Do the proposed zones in here, just maybe real briefly, how do they differ from what's there now, you know, what the current zones are? Address that one.
Do you want me to take
that? The zones really, the goal of the plan is to provide for future funding. That's really one of the major purposes behind the plan. When funding agencies look at providing grants, they want to know what the goal of the area is. So what this plan does, instead of just looking exclusively at land uses, it looks at education. How to improve educational opportunities. It looks at job creation opportunities. It looks at public safety needs. So the land use plan at the end of the day doesn't differ. While the districts have different names to them that don't match up with the traditional residential, commercial, industrial, they're not intended to. What they're intended to do is to say, this is an educational focus in this area. This is a job focus in this area. So one of the things that we've worked with National Corps on is how to integrate this specific plan into the development code that we're working on, because the code that we have today is going to be the new code that we're working on is very different than the current code we have. And how we blend this specific plan in with the new code is something that we have spent quite a bit of time on. So when you look under the names of the districts, when you look at the zoning on the ground, in a lot of cases hasn't changed.
Okay. That clears it up for me. So you're more fine-tuning what happens, but not changing the...
Correct. You know, if you look at, again, the names of the districts, there's the employment district. you know, neighborhood, residential, mixed-use village. That is really the names of those are really what the goal of the district is, and not doesn't necessarily impact the underlying zoning. And I don't know if you want to add anything to that, Alexa.
If I may add to this, I hear the comment about how ambitious this plan is and what it's looking to set out. And it's not really intended to be one city or government driven. It's really to provide a tool for the development community to basically to attract them. For those of you that remember areas like, downtown Pasadena, 3rd Street Promenade in Santa Monica, the Pike in Long Beach, the Gaslamp District, those areas were highly blighted. Back in the 80s or early 90s, cities took measures like this to develop a specific plan. And let's look at this area, maybe where the code said, well, you can have, let's say 5 units to the acre, or you can have a 2-story office building or commercial building there. The reality, the development is attracted by what you can build there. And if a developer could create a more dense property project, a higher or better use, that's going to attract them. And so it does take time, and it is over a period of time that happens. And again, the intent here is a toolbox, if you will, where if you take the city in general and you look at, let's say, the residential zones and whatever district it's called in here, and if someone looks at that zone and they have an acre of property that's residential, and they say, well, if I develop an acre in the specific plan area or an acre that's outside of the area, what's the difference? And developers and real estate professionals, that's what they look for. Where can they maximize? And again, what we're looking for, and through the partnership that we have, and that being an ongoing group, is when a developer comes and says, well, I want to build within this specific plan area. Now that it'll be upon them to present their proposal to the group and say, well, okay, this makes sense. And then that's where the city steps in and say, well, okay, here's how you're complying. When you look at the implementation component of the document, now we as a city will be examining those proposals and say, well, okay, you are meeting the intent or you aren't meeting the intent of the specific plans. Yes, you're going to provide some of these other community benefits in exchange for putting a community park in, as an example, or some road weight improvements or some safety measures. We will increase your density or your floor area ratio. There's kind of a give and take. And so the idea, when we talk about catalyst and we're talking about something that's going to infuse development and really get the excitement, one thing that I've learned in my time doing this is that the development community or developers are about as competitive as anyone is. And so it's just like, well, if Bob got to do that, well, I want to do it too. And so that's how we end up with the new Pasadena or with 3rd Street Promenade kind of a thing, because everyone wants to do each other out. And when we talk about, safety, there are certain safety conditions right now or other hazards. As you move in new product, a new mindset, you squeeze those elements out, and they move forward, because now it's you have folks that now care about the community. We aren't going to change it as a city. We'll never change. You're not supposed to say never and always, right? That's what my therapist says. But anyway, we're not going to change the mindset. Maybe I shouldn't have said that on the mic, huh? But anyway, but really, it's the community, it's the neighbors. It's through these community meetings where they finally stand up, they show up to these things, and you say, we're tired of this. Why do we have to be like this? Not just today, but forever. And what can we do? Those in the communities, they're not professionals. They haven't been trained. They're not experts, in this community. And when they do turn to us, here at City Hall or our partners, it's like, okay, what can we do? And it's like, well, okay, this is a partnership now. How can we do this together? And kind of put it on the shoulders of the community as well. I mean, safety, it's not, it comes in a lot of ways. If your neighbor does something, you know, you got to, you know, shake them up a little bit and say, hey, you know what, we got to, you know, we're a new town here. You know, but it's got to start somewhere, and it's got to start a certain way. And, you know, some of the examples that I give you of other areas where they've done that, where they've been, you know, horribly blighted, and, you know, they turn around. You know, they didn't wake up one morning and they're like that. And so, yes, it is ambitious. Yes, it's going to take time. This is going to take a while. You know, this is a 20, 30-year plan. You know, and again, it's you have to start somewhere, and there's nothing that says that this is concrete. You know, once it's approved or adopted, you know, at some point, it doesn't mean that we can't come back and revisit and say, well, you know what, their circumstances have changed, economic conditions have changed, environmental conditions, whatever might have changed, we could always come back and refine it. You know, we can come back, you know, as our toolbox, we can throw more tools in there, say, well, you know what can we do now? What more can we do? And as people become engaged, as the community becomes engaged, you know, they realize what can be done and what they can ask for. And that's really what we want to do. You know, this is just a starting point. You know, and as we see projects come in, and it's like, well, okay, maybe that worked, maybe it didn't work. But we always have the opportunity to come back and say, well, you know, how can we tweak a little bit? You know, and so whether it's socioeconomic or demographic things that change, you never know. But, you know, certainly San Bernardino is not going to be the same 20 years from now that it is today. And this is an opportunity for us to do something to at least chip in, if you will, to start that change.
Just so help me get fully behind this whole project, the demographics of the communities you mentioned, were they similar to San Bernardino?
Very much so, yes.
Were the economic situation in those same cities similar to San Bernardino?
To an extent, yes.
They were bankrupt?
Well, I
cut to the quick. I'm sorry. That's
well, considering this, well, that's a different discussion. But in that regard, no.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time understanding, because I've seen this similar type of things brought to this city before. I've been a part of them over multiple years here. Plans for the downtown, and I see these plans, then I see 2 years later, we're going to have another group come in and do a plan. And a couple years later, another group comes in and does a plan. So it's really hard for me to jump on the bandwagon again when I've seen this so many times in this city with the same statements made by the other groups, not saying that your group is not good. I'm just saying I've seen this so many times that it makes me a doubting Thomas, so to speak. So I'm hard to convince because of past episodes I've had in this city.
Well, I will say, just as we give new property owners when they come in, we'll use the Zorba Lounge as an example. You know, where we have a property that's been a certain way forever, and we give someone an opportunity to prove us different or wrong, I should say. You know, this is, you know, we have to start somewhere. I mean, I don't mean to sound, you know, defensive, and I don't feel that way, but I've seen other plans like this work. And I think that if you give it a chance, and again, it's not the city that's going to do it. And the expectation is when we are out in the community, when we are outside the community, and we talk to developers and other folks like that, and they ask the question, what's in San Bernardino? Why should I come here? What are the opportunities? And that's what we want to be able to provide with them is a list. You know what? Let me take you on a tour, and we can take them now with this document. Say, you know what? You can do stuff. I mean, there's already wonderful things happening there. If you look at the Val 9 project, and the Waterman Gardens project now that's being revitalized. I mean, those are examples of things that can happen because, frankly, the community wants it to happen. You know, I mean, you reach a point where you're just tired. you know, and you could leave well enough alone, or you could be part of the change. I don't know how else to describe it.
So, I'm sorry. Go ahead. So, in other words, this would be a good tool for you guys to show a developer and say, "Hey, look, this is here. It is. Help us."
Correct.
Basically, is what you're trying to tell us.
Right.
Okay. And I want to say, even though this plan is a vision for 30, 35 years from now, there are opportunities underway right now. In this neighborhood, there's $50 million that has been invested and an additional $150 million that will be invested over the next 6 to 8 years. And so there is opportunity right now to leverage that investment that's going on at Valencia Vista and Arrowhead Grove and the interest that the school district has in exploring a K-12 academy at Eniel Roberts. And these are the type of things that you need to start leveraging, because as this development is occurring right now, it attracts synergistic development. So there's opportunity here today that's underway, but also for the next 20 to 30 years.
If I may, like a lot of us here, I've been here since I was born here, and I've seen a lot of development go on vacant land, and then the planners had an opportunity to look at it and plan what they could, and everything from the mall to the auto center to even this mall over here. It was all planned, and they tore down buildings and they did it. But another thing that came in over time was redevelopment agencies. And when Pasadena and the gas lamp district and that type of thing happened, they were funded with a lot of that money. A lot of that money was put into the communities. And I know business owners down there and property owners could get a little help to change and fix their property. When you take this property up on Baseline and Waterman or wherever we're going here, and you see some of the owners with buildings there and they're trying to rent them out and they have a tenant that wants to come in, now the tenant cannot come in unless they upgrade to some of the things that are in this plan, that's where it becomes really complicated and expensive, and that's not too popular for new businesses coming in. We've dealt with that over the years here in San Bernardino because there's not parking available for a lot of businesses. That's why I was excited to see how creative you got with the parking on that project up there on Sierra Way, because we've seen innovative businesses come in here and go all the way through the process and find out they don't have enough parking spaces to open, so they leave. Well, when you get creative like you did on that, that's good. But to have a whole project like this in that area where it's already developed, a lot of buildings are going to sit vacant until the right money comes along to do it. So to me, I understand what happened down in Palm Desert, and I understand what happens in vacant land when you have an opportunity to control it. But to take a community and put these restrictions on them and these plans, these ideas, it's costly for anybody that has property that wants to develop it. They may not even have the parking that is allowed in this program. So that's where I have a problem with it, because I don't want to put any restrictions on the people that are existing here now. That's what I'm fearful of. So that's my comment.
Anybody else? Will the fee structure for development fees be modified in a plan like this to encourage it, or will it be an increased development impact fee to pay for like off-site infrastructure that needs to be improved on an overall situation to improve transit or sewer or anything like that? Or is that going to fall under the burden of the city? My big thing with this city right now is money, which we don't have. And we're hoping to turn it around. We're going to get out of bankruptcy soon. But that doesn't mean the city is going to be financially sound for a period of years. We didn't get into bankruptcy overnight, and we won't get out of it overnight. So I'm looking at 10 to 15 years before this city could be considered to be solvent and successful. A couple other cities that went bankrupt, one of them went back to bankruptcy again. Concerned with.
Well, the plan is really intended more for larger scale projects and for assemblage of properties, and that's where that's really those types of projects are the ones that bring in the larger infrastructure or the required upgrades. As an example, I'll use the Waterman Gardens project as an example. I mean, that's required to to upgrade, you know, the backbone services in and around that area. And so, you know, as you get these projects and they start connecting, you know, you start connecting these dots, and again, it's not going to happen overnight, but in time with larger scale and kind of to Councilman's Quill's thing, you know, we're not looking at, you know, it's not necessarily looking to restrict or limit, you know, the lot by lot, you know, kind of individual. Those will more divert back to, you know, kind of what our day-to-day practices of our development code kind of a thing. This is really more intended to, you know, kind of those larger scale revitalization, you know, efforts. And and again, like I said, it's going to be a living document, you know, essentially. And we're going going through our development code. I mean, you know, part of that is, you know, you try to anticipate every possible scenario when there's and it's hard to do. You know, eventually, you know, you've got to start somewhere. And then, you know, that's why there are procedures in the document for amending the plan as well.
I'd also like to call your attention, page 815, really this implementation plan, it provides an overall funding strategy, but this is a menu of potential funding sources. So as development comes in, you know, the applicants will sit down with staff and look over, okay, what types of funding programs may make sense for this particular development or this particular street, or groups like the NTC may find a NOFA, a notice of funding availability that's released that they want to apply for. And we now know, okay, we can apply for that and have it used on these types of infrastructure improvements that have been identified in the plan. Prior to this, we didn't even know what the improvements were that are needed. So this is, again, a starting point where we've identified the gaps and the needs and potential opportunities and funding sources that could be applied.
Yeah, I read that portion. But this is where I run into the problem. Again, your organization going to be supporting the city and applying for such as CDBG grants? This city is dismal in their performance of applying and receiving these grants and using these grants. So we need to help as a city in doing this type of work, because we have a commission for the community block grants and they don't do anything.
Yeah.
No, and that's not our thing. It's that particular commission and the council people and whoever staff works on assisting with the grants. So that's what I'm looking forward is the help that this city needs to move forward. And your assurances of a partnership, yours and Oliver's and Mark's, it's important to me that we have a partnership that'll enable us to do what the plan is and get this moving rather than just be another pie-in-the-sky type plan that 2 years from now I'll hear another one. I don't want to do that. I want it to move forward and be something.
And we understand the staff constraints, and I want to give you a prime example of the partnership that's underway. I mentioned we applied for, Sarah was instrumental in working with the city and applying for a housing-related parks program grant. It's offered through the State Department of Housing and Community Development. And so in exchange for the 76 affordable units that are opening, that have opened this month at Valencia Vista, we received $400,000 in grant funds to use for parks and open space in that neighborhood. At the build-out of Arrowhead Grove, we have the potential to apply for an additional up to $2 million, close to $2 million. So as each phase is built, we intend to apply for that money. And we wrote, you know, the grant application, city signed off on it, and we were distributed and won the money. So that's a prime example of our commitment to partner with the city.
Okay, thank you. Anybody have any other questions for anybody? I have one speaker slip. Okay. Thank you. Ajas Orjoy, I think. Please state and spell your last name and give your address for the tape record, please.
All right.
Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Josh Bourgeois. It's B-O-U-R-G-E-O-I-S. And I'm with the SoCal Environmental Justice Alliance. I'm here tonight to talk about the environmental impact report. Obviously, I only have 3 minutes, so I'm not going to be able to get through everything, but you can see our full comments in the letter that we submitted. The first thing I'm going to talk about tonight is the Section 5.2 in regards to air quality. We have a difficulty with the number of the assumptions that are in this section. First and foremost, with Impact 5.2-1, the EIR asserts that the daily VMT, vehicle miles traveled per service population, will go down by 42%. The EIR hasn't explained how this conclusion was reached, and it sounds, quite frankly, untenable. With respect to Impact 5.2-3, the EIR concedes that the long-term emissions from the proposed project would generate a substantial increase in criteria pollutant emissions and would cumulatively contribute to the non-attainment designation of the Southern California Air Basin. In Impact Section 5.2-4, concludes that construction activities related to build-out could expose sensitive receptors to significant pollutant concentrations, but the EIR does not do a health risk assessment. Doing one was both fully possible and appropriate, as it is now proposed to shield the projects in the area from future review without having informed the public about the risks that the project will entail. In regards to 5.2-15, the EIR identifies the health effects of ozone and PM2.5, but it neglects to do so for PM10 or diesel particulate matter. Specifically, contrary to the requirements of the Bakersfield Citizens for Local Control case. In regards to Impact 5.2-5, build-out of the proposed project could result in new sources of criteria air pollutant emissions and or toxic air contaminants near existing or planned sensitive receptors. The EIR states at first that the proposed project would not involve warehousing or similar uses where substantial truck idling could occur on site, and then secondly, that the area could accommodate more warehousing and trucking facilities. Later on, it specifically notes the employment area allows for light industrial and warehouse uses. If it will allow for warehouses, they should have been evaluated. The statement that there will be further SCAQMD permitting would not apply with respect to warehousing, and such uses pose significant health concerns. And I'm almost out of time. With that, I thank you for the opportunity to speak here today. Again, the full scope of our comments can be found in the comments letter that we submitted. Thank you again.
Thank you. Anybody have any questions or comments for Mr. Bourgeois? Pardon me? Do we have access to that letter?
Yes, it's included in the final. If I may, the final environmental impact report does include a copy of the letter, and it includes our responses to those comments. And we believe that those comments have been adequately addressed. And again, we are forwarding a recommendation that the final EIR ultimately be approved.
I didn't see a copy of that letter in our packet, so I must have missed it here. I'm looking.
It's contained within the final environmental impact report, which was an attachment by link.
One moment, please. It's not in the attachment. I don't have that attachment.
It's included with the staff report referred you to a link of to the final, both the specific plan and the environmental impact report. It directs you to our website.
It has a staff report, but it doesn't have the attachment. So I was trying to find Mr. Bourgeois, I have trouble with French, that he was referring to. So mm-hmm. I didn't see it. So.
If you look at the final page of the staff report, there is a link to the final EIR, which is posted on the department's webpage.
it's a rather large document, and these are the way the documents are incorporated by reference so that the commission and the public can find copies of them. We did receive a copy of the letter. As the speaker noted, it was submitted, and as Oliver noted, response to comments was prepared, and we do believe that we've addressed all of their concerns.
Okay. All righty. Anything else for questions, comments? At this point, then, I would entertain a motion. Commissioner Machen.
I move that the Planning Commission adopt resolution number 2016-059, forwarding a recommendation to the Mayor and Common Council, the certification of the final environmental impact report and approval of specific plan 15-01 based on the findings of fact.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
That's 2 opposed, 4 approved.
So what I am talking to the city attorney's office, I was not aware of this actually until earlier this morning. The Planning Commission in 1999, I don't believe anybody currently on the dais was a member of the commission back in 1999, adopted a set of rules for how the commission would conduct its business. This is not within the municipal code. These are really self-imposed rules that, again, were adopted almost 20 years ago. And under these rules, it does require that 5 members of the commission make an affirmative recommendation for a general plan amendment or zone change to the city council. However, I guess there are two options that the commission has. One would be to forward this without a final recommendation. The other would be to suspend the rules. Two-thirds of the commissioners could make a motion to suspend the rules. I would say probably repeal the rules because I don't believe that any of us know what they actually say. Again, I became aware of them less than 12 hours ago. So a document that's almost 20 years old, I'm not sure, certainly isn't current. So I'm not sure what the commission's preference would be. So there are a couple of options that the Planning Commission has. I guess the third option would be to continue the item to the next hearing where there would be more commissioners there. The commissioners that are absent prior to voting would have to listen to all of the testimony and all of the discussion that that took place this evening. There is, as Oliver pointed out, the Planning Commission could, the two commissioners that voted against the item could reconsider their votes. So there's at least four options that the commission has that they can pursue this evening.
I'm going to suggest that we take a 10-minute recess so I can absorb and clarify my own mind as to whether I will sustain with my non-support vote or whether I'm going to change my vote. I need a little bit of time to assimilate the information provided tonight. So we're in recess for 10 minutes until, let's make it to 8:30. Thank you.
Thank you. just wanted to introduce myself.
Yeah, thanks.
Oh, no, you're good.
Suggestions. I mean, I
Thank you for the delay. I'm going to bring the hearing back online. And after consultation with Oliver and Mark and further explanation provided to me, I'm going to ask for the motion to be resubmitted and the second resubmitted in a revote on that motion is... I don't remember who made the motion to start with. You consider resubmitting your motion as that? I don't think he has to read it again, does he?
I don't believe so.
And
second.
And the second was Mr. Jones. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carried unanimously. And you can thank Mark and Oliver for coming up and providing us with the additional information, specifics, that at least I needed to make a decision. Okay, if people in the audience, public comments, items not on the agenda. Okay. Planning Commission reports or announcements? Commissioner Eggly?
Yes, I'm sure that everyone has heard. One of our Neighborhood Association Council presidents was murdered last Wednesday. His name was John Griffin. Our prayers and thoughts go out to him and his family. He was a very, very, very wonderful person. I got the opportunity to work with him on a number of occasions. He was the Delton Heights president. And they currently have found a suspect and have him in custody. which is the only good news about it, but please pray for his family and the NAC. We've lost two residents in the last 2 months.
Wow. I didn't hear about that. Jane? Any other planning commissioner reports or announcements? Director's report.
Yes, thank you, Chair and commissioners. I'll make this brief. Stephanie has a copy of the major projects list that she will hand out. This is, again, posted on our departmental website. I don't know if any commissioners have looked at the department website or the city website recently, but the city does have a new website. It's actually much easier to navigate. It's got a much better feel, much better layout, and it is optimized for smartphones as well as tablets. So it's actually a great website. Be happy to answer any questions on any of the projects on the list. And then the second item that I wanted to bring to the commission's attention was a update that we're doing to the sign ordinance. The commission has heard a couple of presentations from Travis, who's the project manager of the development code update. The sign code update, Chantal Power is the project manager on that. The council did approve a contract for an outside consultant, and Larry Quill, everybody knows with Quill Brothers Signs, has offered in his capacity as a member of the chamber to work with the chamber to get a focus group of chamber members to work with planning staff and our consultant as we work on the update to the sign ordinance. The hope is, and the expectation is, that even though the sign ordinance started later, the process started later, that because it's a, I won't necessarily say it's an easier project, but it's certainly a much narrower scope, that we'll be able to bring both of those items to the development code and the sign code update together to the commission middle of next year for you to consider the entire package and then make a recommendation to the council. So there's a lot of work to do between here and the next 6 months, but we think we'll have it done by June or July of next year. And that's it for my report, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for the director?
No. And I would like to say thank you to Larry Quill for taking that on.
Thank you.
That'll be a challenge.
And then one last item that Stephanie has. I think you are all aware that about 3 months ago,
yes.
Stephanie got promoted to be my executive assistant, and we went through a lengthy recruitment process, and we have found somebody to replace Stephanie, so I'll let Stephanie introduce her.
Yes, so at the last meeting, as promised, we do have a new team member. She is taking my previous position as executive assistant on the admin team. Her name is Melina Perez Ramirez, and she is here tonight. She will be taking over duties for Planning Commission along with DRC, so next month this meeting will be hers. So this is Melina, if you want to come up and say hi.
And we plan on being gentle. The first time. Just the first time. Ask Elizabeth.
Nice to meet you all, and hopefully I don't let you down the next meeting.
At this time, to Wednesday, December 14th at 6 p.m., modified from our regular schedule a little bit. I've got a motion.
Second.
We've got all kinds of seconds. All in favor?
Who was my first?
Who was? I don't know who was first on that.
Thank you.
Yeah. He was the motion. And we have 5 seconds.
Uh-oh.
Only three and four times? How many of the charrettes did you come in and give feedback on? You know, and that's what grates on me a lot.